Of Nelson teaming up with Eric Dolphy with 6 and 4. That is from their 1961 album, Straight Ahead. Dolphy's, of course, on clarinet and flute. Nelson also is on clarinet. Richard Wyons on piano, George Duvivier on bass, and Roy Haynes on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And my guest, who should have been with us today, is not. He's got an emergency. And so I'll use the half hour, because we still have a guest for the second half, and I'll use the first half to talk to you, and you can talk to me. Questions that you have that you would want answered. Let's hope that they're the kinds of questions I can answer at 888-874-4888. We could just have a chat for at least a half hour or so, and then we move on to our scheduled program, whose guest is ready. So things happen a lot, and I just didn't want to just stick in another program from nowhere. I just wanted to use the time profitably, and it occurred to me, we haven't talked to each other much. I like to hear you talk among yourselves, but it's a good idea that we should get to know each other and talk about things that you are concerned about or want answers to. This is a good time to do it. We have the time today. As I said, the second half of the program will continue as planned. These things happen. It's not tragic. It's just a development. And it was too late to organize something else that would have been pleasing to you. So I like the idea of talking to each other. We have a good 25 minutes to do that. And then we proceed with our next half of the program. 888-874-4888. People tell me all the time, you know, I wanted to ask you about this, or I wanted to ask you about that. Well, now's a good time. Ask your questions, and we'll see. We'll see how I, or if I could even answer them. But the time is available. Let's make the best use of it. 888-874-4888. You can ask me anything you wish. And I'm trying to answer your question just as you asked it. Okay, let's hear from you. 888-874-4888. Some very interesting topics coming up in the next week or so. And I hope you will tune in, of course, as you usually do, because it's exciting. What I have planned is quite exciting and not heard anywhere. Would you believe I listened to myself for the first time after doing or mediating a discussion from some years ago involving my good buddy and pal, Dr. John Henrik Clark, taking on some scholars on the question of Egyptians and European culture. I was startled. It went so well. It really was very impressive. And, you know, I'm trying to find a way to share it with you because it was a doozy. It was really a very good public seminar. Russ from Florida, you are the first to call in, so ask me a question.
Well,
hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So you probably heard about this already, but and I don't know what you think about Naomi Wolf, but do you ever watch Fox News?
Not much at all.
Okay. And so this might be a tell for the kind of world we're living in right now when you see cats and dogs getting together to solve their problems. And by that I mean Naomi Wolf was a guest of Tucker Carlson on Fox,
yes.
and they were discussing, and she was, she was very concerned about what was going on in the country, and her exact words were that she felt that the government and the corporations were getting together, similar to what was going on in Italy years ago when fascism existed. So, she made a lot of enemies probably by appearing on Fox News. And I honestly don't know much about Naomi Wolf. I know that she's known to be
a feminist, New Age feminist, if you will. But what is your question?
Well, I just wondered if you were surprised that a woman like that, with that kind of a reputation, with people that she probably doesn't want to alienate, but felt strongly enough to appear on Fox News to, explain that she felt like the trajectory, even with the Biden administration, is that we're headed into a period of fascism in our country.
Well, how was it received by the host?
Oh, he was very congratulatory for having the courage to come on Fox News, even though he said that we probably disagree on 95% of everything else that, our positions might be, but that he said, I'm sure you're going to get a lot of bad press from people who generally align with you that you could even appear on Fox News, let alone agree with one of their dominant thinkers.
Oh, Lord. That's that kind of conversation, and I didn't see it, but it annoys me because, they create their own news about themselves. Oh, I'm so glad that you're here, although I'm sure you're going to get negative reaction from your constituency. Who cares? Who cares what reaction she gets? What she is looking for is, and she got it, was free press. And that's the end of that, too. There's nothing more complicated than that.
Well,
thanks for your question.
Can
go
I
ahead.
Ask you something?
You were formulating
well,
a follow-up. Hello?
Yes, can you hear
me? No, I can't, because I believe you are speaking remotely, not directly into your phone or to your mouthpiece. So I'm picking up echoes and sounds that I'm not supposed to hear. And you don't come across as clearly as you ought to.
I have a Bluetooth speaker here that I can just turn off.
Well, the one thing that, and I say this to people all the time,
is that
understand
better?
The medium that you are involved with. If you understand it, you know exactly what you have to do in order to come across pitch clear.
Okay, how's it sound now? I just turned off my Bluetooth
speaker.
It sounds
real. It sounds very good now.
Okay, good. Because I just got that speaker, and the reason why I did was because I travel around the house performing my daily ritual, and I can't always sit by the desktop computer to listen to the shows. So now I'm allowed to go around the house. It's very good, but I can't have it on when I call you. So just to follow up with what you said, I mean, when I call up and I try and find the words to explain to you or paraphrase what I saw on Tucker Carlson's show and Naomi Wolf and all that, you know, don't go by what my crude use of words to describe what would happen, what was there. You would have to see it for yourself. But I'll also say that.
But I don't want to. This is the thing. I'm not interested. And seeing that,
well,
I really have no interest in seeing it.
I'll just follow up. I'll just finish up by saying that Gary just had that interview on his show today. He thought highly enough of it for his audience that they should witness it. So that might bring a little bit more credibility to it. But I think the main point was that people who are generally on opposite ends of the spectrum politically and with a lot of current events found the need to join forces to express a point of view that should be of concern to all people, irregardless of their political leanings. This is the point of what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but I'm saying it is not a particularly insightful point. Because 40 years ago, that would have been a relevant point. You know, people who are hounds, media hounds, they don't care about whether the medium they're appearing in is considered this or that. They just want airtime. And that helps them promote themselves. It's as basic as
that. Are you suggesting that both participants, both Tucker and Naomi Wolf, were not authentic in their concerns about the topic?
No, that's what you say. What I'm saying is I'm not interested
in either one of those people.
They're predictable in the way they think. There's nothing new that they bring to the table. They, you know, reiterate old arguments and so forth and make them try to look like new ones.
How can you say that if you've never listened to Tucker Carlson?
I've listened to Tucker Carlson as much as I could take. And I didn't make the full hour. I can't last that long.
Yeah, that's fine. No, I'm just glad that you were able to listen to him at all. But, I mean,
yes.
It's only TV. I mean, I listen to everything. I listen to you. I listen to Gary. I listen to Fox. I listen to CNN. I listen to MSNBC. I read. I try and educate myself as best as I can. I participate in written blogs. I comment. I get responses. I try and, you know, be as open as possible to everything, and I filter out what I feel is not authentic or constructive, and I listen to people that call into your show. Everything adds to the mix, you know.
But, I'm sorry.
Hello.
Nothing meaningful to say, from my perspective. Nothing.
So do you
really
feel that? Do you feel that? All these things that are going on, do you like the idea that people's voices are censored? Is that okay with you?
If you would pardon me, that's a dumb question. Okay? I've never told anybody that, but that is a dumb question.
No, I'm just asking you, are you okay with Twitter censoring
something.
People?
It's a dumb question.
Well, the right
me.
To free speech is part of our constitutional rights. So if we're going to have corporations and governments.
Your constitutional rights and free speech, I leave that to you. because you're apparently an expert on free speech.
No,
I'm not concerned about that. I am concerned when I tune into a program, whether it's on television or radio or whatever medium, I am concerned that I should have an anticipation of learning something. And most often, it doesn't happen. So I've learned to protect myself and to maintain calm, because having to invest my time with their nonsense doesn't make sense to me. Thanks for calling in and getting us started. Thank you. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice.
Hello. What's your question for me?
Well, I have a question for you, but I just wanted to mention, because I failed to mention the last few times I called, Dr. Peter Bragan's show this month, three of the show on the 3rd, the 10th, and the 17th. Were incredible shows that everybody needs to listen to if they haven't heard them already. In fact, the one on the 3rd, he said, was the most important interview he ever did.
But don't go there. I'm asking you, please, stay on point. The floor is yours to ask me a question, not to do an advertisement.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's because it's a show that comes on PRN.
Yes, it is. So. I know him personally.
Right. And he said that the most important interview he ever did was on the 3rd of February, this month's show. So I just wanted to mention it because it's very important to listen to.
It's been mentioned. Now ask me, please,
the question
use
that
your
I had
time
for
wisely.
You.
Ask me a question.
Yeah, the question I had for you is, since you grew up in Trinidad, I was wondering, is things like in the States, did you have to get vaccines when you were younger?
Yes, we did, because we had quite a few pandemics ourselves, like polio, typhoid fever. We had to get vaccinated as children.
Okay, because I didn't know if it was just something that they did in this country. And, you know, I remember very traumatic situations. Well, you know, I was, I don't know what kind of a vaccine it was, but it was.
But in any country where, especially one that has experienced a national crisis, and the health authorities believe that they have to intercede, and the best and most efficient way to do so is to distribute vaccines. That's what we ended up with. I ended up getting a vaccine during the time of polio and typhoid fever. As it happens, my brother came down with typhoid fever, one of my brothers. Wow. So it was, I think, the end result of the United Nations getting involved, because it was really all over the Caribbean. Thanks for your question.
Thank you.
Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hi, what's your question? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I have a question for you. The question is, why aren't there more shows like yours, particularly yours, where the public can engage with the host, and where the host and the public can mobilize to create change in our country? Because, I mean, particularly on when it comes to, like, social issues and let's just put it out there, you know, on the left side of the political spectrum, because I see that the on the right side of the political spectrum, they do that very efficiently. They just lost one of their main drivers, Rush Limbaugh. He just passed away. But he was one of those figures that inspired a lot of those conservatives to produce these radio shows where they engage with the public. And I see that on the left, it seems like the left-wing media shuts out debate and feedback from the public. The political, the Democratic Party really doesn't engage with their constituents in a way where they seem to like be afraid to give up control or a little power to the people and listen to what they have to say. Why is that? Why can't we have more shows like yours where people can call and contribute and express their needs and wants in our society?
Thanks for the question. I think it has to do with the notion of what media has come to be for, at least in the minds of the owners of the media. It's a cult of personality. And they think that that is going to drive building an audience, and in turn that drives advertisements. So a lot is centered on the personality behind the mic. I happen not to think that. I think, in fact, I always boast about it, the less talking I do, the happier I am. I'm interested in what people have to say. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, they're coming from this point of view or that. It matters only that they have the ability to present themselves and what they're thinking, and people are free to react. And my job is traffic cop. I just, you know, direct the traffic. The best show is when I don't do much talking at all. Similarly, when I was writing, got a lot of feedback from people, and I always would print their letters. And some of the letters were a bit long, but they were important. I really believe it is important to pay attention to the people who are subscribing to any particular medium. Be very, very careful not to exclude them from the conversation. Thanks a lot for your call. And with those remarks, I'm going to shift gears now and begin the second part of our program today. Our guest is Kim Ives. He is and has been a journalist, an award-winning journalist, a documentarian, an author, and he has done quite a bit of reporting for us here at Lead Stories. And he's with us today to give us an update on the serious situation in Haiti. Hey, Kim, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Therese. It's great to be back after our slight hiatus.
Yeah. Well, I should start by asking, what's the situation in Haiti?
Well, I guess it can be captured in one of the most recent episodes that took place over this past weekend, when a film crew, a 17-car convoy of a film crew, which was doing a film on kidnapping, was stopped and had some of its members kidnapped. This more or less captures the moment, the level of the crisis in Haiti, where it has become completely out of control. Even though Jovenel Moïse, the de facto now president, since his term expired on February 7th, he is claiming to have Haiti completely under control. Essentially, as your listeners may know, Haiti installs its new presidents every 5 years or thereabouts, on February 7th. And according to the Haitian Constitution of 1987, Article 134.2, Jovenel Moïse was to have stepped down on that date and passed the presidency on to another president, a following president. This is after a year and a month of ruling by decree. He essentially disbanded the parliament in January 13th, 2020, and had been ruling by decree. And during that period, he did things like say, not only am I going to stay beyond February 7th, 2021 for an extra year, but I am going to rewrite the Constitution. I am going to set up a new Gestapo-like force of spies who not only can spy on people, but can arrest them, can shoot them. These are armed spies. They're like James Bond or something. You know, they can have license to kill. And you have no right to prosecute them, no matter what they do. This is a force that he set up by decree. And so this gives us some idea of how out of control this president is. Now, the Trump administration has absolutely no problem with him and said, you know, he's our guy. And he was, because he stabbed Venezuela in the back in January of 2019, after the country had provided Haiti with over $4 billion of cheap oil, after Venezuela had provided Haiti with that cheap oil under the Petrocaribe Fund, which we've talked about on Lead Stories before, where Haiti yes. got cheap oil and only had to pay 60% up front, and 40% went into a capital fund to build roads and schools and clinics and hospitals, whatever the Haitian people needed. But this money was instead embezzled by the Martelly Group in large part. And to some extent, it's been proven now that much of that money, or some of that money, went to Jovenel Moïse as well. And so the U.S. government is very happy to be dealing with these people, because Jovenel Moïse turned around after receiving all that Petrocaribe support and said that Nicolas Maduro was illegitimate and recognized Juan Guaido and is calling for a revolution in Venezuela. So this gives you some idea of who we're dealing with. Now, the Trump people totally supported that. The Biden people, you know, it's just so pathetic. They've come and, you know, had a Security Council meeting with Jovenel on Monday. And they scolded him. They said, oh, you know, you really are a very bad boy to have been doing all these decrees, which are much overstepping your power. And it's not very nice at all what you're doing. So please quickly hold elections. So they want to keep him in power. And they're basically, despite these stern words, are continuing to support him. So the Haitian people, nonetheless, are gradually, the demonstrations are growing and growing. This past weekend on Sunday, there was another large demonstration. The weekend before, there had been one. And the next weekend, the imagine who? It is the Protestants are having a huge demonstration against dictatorship. That's the name of them. Protestants Against Dictatorship are holding a demonstration for life. It's not for anti-abortion. It's, you know, for life in Haiti, I guess. So this shows you just how deep the popular rejection of Moïse is if the Protestants can be coming out like that. So this is the situation right now, Yatrice, and yeah, maybe I went on too long there, but
as I talk to people, so many people are saying they expect that the government will fall and there would be an incredible catastrophe, and it's mm-hmm. just a matter of time. Do you share that view?
Well, no. You know, this is always, of course, how the U.S. in particular, and I could say the European former slave-holding, slave-trading, colony-holding, neo-colony, now-holding nations always portray Haiti as this bunch of savages who are, you know, going to go crazy, you know, at the minute they turn their back. This is what happened during the 2010 earthquake. You know, they were so worried about looting. No, the Haitian people are among the most civilized and serene and solidarity oriented people there are in the world. And the U.S. and France and Canada getting off their back would be the time of a renaissance, as we saw in 1990 and 91 with the birth of the Lavalas movement and the election of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. It was, as Aristide said in his inauguration at that time, Haiti's second independence. But, you know, it was immediately and savagely stamped upon with coup d'etats and then military occupations, followed by another coup d'etat in 2004 and another military occupation. So they've been trying to stamp out this movement for democracy in Haiti for the last 35 years. Let's remember, it was on February 7th, 1986 that Jean-Claude Duvalier left, and that was really the beginning of the modern era of democracy in Haiti. And hence every year, every 5 years, a new president is supposed to come in on February 7th. And this year, it was supposed to be a new one. In 1991, it was Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And basically for 20 years, Utrice, we had Lavalas and semi-Lavalas governments ruling Haiti from 1991 to 2011. But for these past 10 years, from 2011 to 2021, it's been this neo-Duvalierist party installed by Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton in power, the first Michel Martelly and then Jovenel Moïse, and they have been basically trying to turn back the clock. But the Haitian people are fighting back, and I think if Jovenel were to leave, yeah, sure, there'd be some mess. There'd be some jockeying and elbowing and, you know, people jumping to get into power and so forth. But I think the Haitian people would be very able to make their own democracy, and a much better one than the fake one, the McDonald's one, the totally hypocritical one that the U.S. State Department has tried to put in place there.
How is it that when we talk about Haiti generally, no matter who reports about it, it's usually the ineptness of the government and the lack of sophistication of the Haitian people that are driving the conditions on the ground, and not U.S. interference, not U.S. controls. You mentioned the Clintons, who still have their hands around Haiti's throat. Why does this not concern the United States directly when you see a former president and a former wannabe president just so directly involved and orchestrating basically the fall of another government?
Right. Well, this is, you know, I think about it a lot, Utrice, because the campaign that was concocted by the Clintons at the time was called Build Back Better after the earthquake. And that's exactly the same slogan they're using today with Biden. Not very auspicious, is it? But You know, this is of course the irony of this moment right now. It's the velvet glove, which is on the iron fist of U.S. capitalism and imperialism. They always try this soft power bluff, but the Haitian people have seen completely through it, and all of their smarts and glibness cannot get them out of the disdain and even hatred that the Haitian people hold for them. I'm referring to the Clintons right now. And to some extent, Biden and Obama, who are basically cut from exactly the same cloth, are going down the same road and are going to end up getting the same enraged reaction from the Haitian people. It is just inevitable that this thing is going to end badly. But to me, at the end of the day, the longer it goes, the deeper the revolution will be. As the Haitians say, pita pitris, the later, the sadder. And this is what will happen, is that already in 2019, there were massive, massive demonstrations. Jovenel came within an inch of being driven from the country. But the people were not just asking for Jovenel to go. They were asking for system change. System change. And I wrote a piece for a magazine called Rupture in January 2020, just before the pandemic hit. And its title was Haiti's Second Social Revolution. And essentially, I think that's what we are on the verge of, the social revolution being different from a political revolution in that it's when the property relations in a country change, when the factories, the land, the ports go from the hands of this small group of exploiters who have basically repressed the people and sucked their blood for two centuries would change, and truly a second independence would come about, and Haiti would no longer be under the thumb of the U.S. So I think the longer we delay or they try to delay Moïse's downfall, the more and more radical the revolution will be.
I want to stay with the U.S. policies for one minute more, and that is, how does the United States explain its presence, a continued presence and a continued malevolent presence in Haiti this long, and still get away without having much criticism or much fear of criticism?
They avoid it outside of Haiti, not in Haiti, not in the streets, not on the corners, in the Haitian community, even here in the United States. There's a reason why they even convinced Haitians, to vote for Trump, who ended up calling Haiti an asshole, as we know, but this was because of their anger and frustration at the Clintons. I mean, a lot of this has to do, as you know very well, Eutrice, with the media, which works hand in glove, to go back to the glove simile or metaphor, with the neoliberal globalists who are back in charge. They have this sort of patronizing and totally false picture that they portray of the Haitians as this sort of emotional and people who don't know what they want, can't govern themselves, don't understand democracy, don't understand this and that. And this seeps in everywhere into the narrative. And, you know, as Goebbels said, lie, 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 something always remains. And so this ends up being sort of the picture that people get consciously and subconsciously of Haiti. And that's why we have something like Haiti Liberté, I mean, which is primarily in French and Creole and aimed at politically educating the Haitian people. But we do have an English section, of which, of course, as you said, I'm the editor of the English section. And in a law, this is to try to give, in the small way that we can, the other side of the story to people so that they do understand that the U.S. has played this completely toxic role in Haiti and done so much to undermine and set back the Haitian democracy, which was born 35 years ago.
It boggles the mind that at the same time there are such condemnations about Haiti and how unable they are to govern themselves, how uneducated they are, how they have to be taught from scratch how to build a nation, let alone rule one. And it just so happens we should mention that Haiti was the first nation really in the entire region to be self-directed. They waged a campaign and won against the colonialists. But how does Haiti survive now? What's the day-to-day explanation for how people so terribly exploited with no money really to think of, how do they persist?
Well, it's a it is true. Since I did a film in the early 1980s called Bitter Cane, which showed the old colonial and neo-colonial economy that Haiti had, which was based essentially on the export of commodities like sugar and coffee and cacao, and increasingly the growth of an assembly factory sector in Port-au-Prince, which is now metastasized to areas like the northeast town of Wanamet and the new one we talked about also on this show, Carousel in near Cape Haitian. So these assembly factories, which produce our electronics and clothing, assembled with cheap labor, $5 a day, is what essentially remains of the economy. The agricultural part of it that I mentioned earlier has stopped. That's basically been crushed under the dumping of the U.S. And Dominican Republic on Haiti. Even lemons Haiti is importing these days. It's crazy. And the economy has become essentially one of what anthropologist Tim Schwartz, in a book that your listeners should definitely try to pick up, The Great Haiti Humanitarian Aid Swindle. Just look up swindle in Haiti and you'll find it. It calls it the victim economy. And it's essentially where these NGOs, which is the eighth largest economy in the world, this NGO humanitarian aid economy, which come into the country and increasingly, you know, people make their living that way. You know, oh, I'm a victim. I was a victim of rape, or I was a victim of something or other. And they get support, et cetera. And sometimes, you know, orphans who are not orphans end up getting to the U.S. Because their parents encourage them to portray themselves as orphans. And then, you know, maybe some family in Wichita will adopt you and will have, you know, some line to get into the U.S. So this is the state that Haiti has been reduced to, Utrice, where it has been basically hammered into this victim role, and the Haitian people are sick of it. They want to produce their own food, their own handicrafts, as they used to 30, 40 years ago. Haiti used to have a thriving economy of, as one of your other guests I know you've had, Daddy Cherie, has explained in her book, We Dare to Be Free. They had their own clothing. They had their own handicrafts. They had their own industries. All of this has been smashed. And so all this needs to and can come back. And the Haitian people remember it, even in the historical memory of the young today, you know, passed down. So this is, I think, what people are fighting for. They want to get away from this clown mafia, which is now in control of the PHTK, of Jovenel Moïse and Michel Martelly, who is threatening to come back for a second term if there are elections held. Very surely Jovenel might pass the election to him in one way or another. And Biden and Obama and the Clintons would not care. They would be happy. On the contrary, when the Haitians chased out one of Martelly's prime minister, Laurent Lamothe, Bill Clinton said, oh, that was a mistake. That was the best prime minister they ever had. The guy who burned through three quarters of the Petro-Caribe funds to do nothing, zero. Even the stadiums he claimed he was building turned out to be fake. So this is the situation right now. And, you know, I think the Haitian people are... it will, once again, as they have many times in the past, educate the world as to how, through persistence, you can defeat the empires that come to crush you.
You have written extensively and filmed the consequences of the Clintons' presence in Haiti. Where did that end up?
Well,
what was the consequence for the Clintons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, for the Clintons, there hasn't really been a consequence. I mean, unless you can say the election of Donald Trump was a consequence, because the same frustration, the same anger at the G6 is the Creole term meaning dry eye. It means where you can straight-faced lie, where you can be so completely shameless. This same rage that the Haitians feel towards people like the Clintons is what happened in the U.S. working class, became so disgusted with the Clintons and with the neoliberal globalists and their double talk and their hypocrisy that, you know, they voted in the Donald Trump. So I would say one of the consequences, and somehow in Haiti, the magnification of their misdeeds is so much clearer. I mean, what could be more astonishing in Haiti after the earthquake when they said they're going to build back better? And what did they build? They built two luxury hotels, both of which are failing now, and an assembly factory sweatshop complex in the north of Haiti, far from the earthquake zone, which is also failing now. So the results of their hubris, of their game, of their tremendous, what can we call it, charade, that they carried out in Haiti is shown in those two hotels in that sweatshop complex in Haiti, and here in the U.S. in the embodiment of Donald Trump.
And in the meantime, they pocketed millions and millions of dollars.
Yes. The millions of dollars, I think, primarily comes through this Clinton Global Initiative, which I went to the gala of it in New York some years ago. Maybe I talked about it with you, Eutrice, I forget.
Yes.
But it's really quite a show. I mean, it's like Disneyland meets, the Rolling Stones, and, you know, lights and drones and steady cams and, you know, spotlights. It's a real circus. And, you know, they trot out all these billionaire sheiks and Carlos Slim and you name it. You got all the money from the world coming around. And, you know, as their slogan says, you can do well doing good. You can make money by pretending to help people. So in any case, you know, you do that to enough people and you fake out enough people, they're going to get mad. And I think that's what's happening in the world today in this return of the Bidens and the Obamas and the Clintons to power. I think it's the honeymoon is probably already ending.
Wow.
Certainly is in Haiti.
So what is your next project in Haiti?
Well, our next project, actually, we had a phone call, the Black Alliance for Peace has launched an initiative of getting support to the Haitian people here in the U.S. So there may be a delegation, there may be a large demonstration. These are all being talked about. We at Haiti Liberté have essentially, the paper is not just there to inform, but really to organize. And we've been working with our grassroots and people on the ground in Haiti for these many years, the past 14 years of our existence and before. And so we are really trying to build from the grassroots up a real alternative to the clown mafia that we now see in power, something where the people can not only form their own government, but defend it.
I want to thank you so much for taking time from your very busy schedule. I know you've been like from dawn to dusk at work, but I want to thank you so much. Always you're available to explain to us what's going on, and let's talk again soon. Thanks again for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Utrice, for offering us your bully pulpit.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of our program today. Let's tune in with each other tomorrow and see what we get. Bye-bye.